You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God.
Good morning and welcome to Unity of Tustin. It's great to see everyone this morning. Our senior minister, Reverend Carolyn, is away for the weekend, and so we just want to keep her in prayer today, and I just invite you into prayer right now. As we just breathe in the presence of the Lord that is in this place, that resides within each one of us, and as we breathe out, acknowledging the presence of the holy in one another, those that surround us. God of many names, those by which we know you and have experienced you in the world and in our lives, and God of mystery, that which we don't understand or have not experienced yet, but acknowledge that, Spirit, you are working. Gather us in this place today in oneness and as individuals in our own humanity, bringing our joy, our sorrow, our anxiety, and everything in between. And above all, acknowledging the divinity in ourselves, that we carry the presence of God. And we live the presence of God and breathe that presence into the world. And so be with us today in everything. May it be so. Amen.
Now, today's guest speaker.
Sometimes I joke, I have a 5-year-old boy. And sometimes I joke that it's fun watching him transition gradually from wild animal to human being. It's actually kind of probably sort of literally true. What's sort of happening, you know, gradually start wanting to wear clothes, you know. Gradually care if there's food all over your face and hair and your arms, you know, as you're eating. You know. But I definitely think there's clearly a dichotomy. There's both sides in people. There's human and there's crazy. Right? There's kind and there's cruel and there's emotional and there's thoughtful. And today is about a very specific dichotomy. It's certainly one of the at the same time greatest curses, I think, in humanity. And one of the greatest gifts to humanity is the what now, what next. As far as I can tell, humans have never, ever been satisfied with where they're at, what they've done, who they are. I mean, maybe each generation, maybe each century even, maybe each millennium has a different standard for achievement. But whatever that standard of achievement has ever been, we've never been enough. If we built a giant city, it could have been more giant. If we built a giant business, it could have been more giant. If we built a giant fortune, it could have been more giant. If we were famous, we could have been more famous. If we were handsome, we could have been more handsome. If we were beautiful, we could have been more beautiful. If we wrote a book that sold 1 million copies, it could have sold 2 million. If we made a movie that was Avatar, we could have made a sequel. Whatever it is, there's always a what now. Always. And it is, no doubt, like the impelling thing that causes all of us to go back to the gym, right? Study for the test, go to therapy with the partner, find a new customer for the business, take Rogaine, whatever it is. Whatever it is. I can think of other pills to mention, but let's just go with Rogaine right now. And so we've you know, that what now, what next, where could this go, how big could this get, what have I not done yet? That is, God, it's exhausting. But it also is the reason to get up in the morning rather than lie down. My favorite comedians is Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or heard his comedy. He's hilarious. You know, he says, why would I make the bed? And that's clearly where I want to be, you know, all day. You know, I'm headed back there sooner rather than later. You know, so today I'm thinking about this what now thing. All right, that's on my mind, and you're the victims of what's on my mind. So sorry about that. And I am, you know, I wrote the song Where the Ocean Says to Go 11 years ago now, and I am way more of a hypocrite singing it now than I was when I wrote it. All right, so. If you're sitting there and you're listening, if you were doing me the honor, and I mean literally, you don't have to listen to anything I say or sing, but if you were listening to lyrics and thinking, boy, that's what an enlightened way to be, you know, that's profound. I should just go where the ocean, yeah, I'd be so at peace. Yeah, yes, you would be, and so would I. And you know what, as I've said many times, I dabble in it. And dabbling in it is the best I can do. I wrote it, I meant it, I feel it, I want it, but I also don't want it, if that makes sense, right? Because I have that human thing, that what now, what next thing. But so today I'm really just mostly just thinking out loud about the effects of the what now impulse on your life and on my life. I can't answer any of the questions for you, but maybe some thought will occur to you that you hadn't ever thought of or that you'd forgotten about on a spotlight on stage, you know, they have gels, right. So they lay over these colors, and all of a sudden the white light was blue or green or yellow, red, whatever it was. And I think we all have those ways of looking at ourselves and everything around us and the people in our lives and the things we've done and haven't done. And most of the time, as far as I can tell, beyond a certain age anyway, you know, there's like an introspection age. There's age appropriate for everything. Or there's like, you know, natural, I think, for everything. And I think there's a journaling age and a diary age, you know, and a, you know what I mean? There's those times, but not to guess your ages, but I think most of us are probably more in the gel age where there are assumptions laid over the day and feelings laid over the day and presumptions and feelings that color everything, generally speaking, without noticing. For example, I asked this the first service because I sometimes have to struggle with this. I am a very busy entrepreneur, call it. I spend every day in my studio, and I am either writing a song or recording a song or booking a gig or developing something, planning something, because I invent my living. Entrepreneurs do, right? I'm inventing it every day. So my brain is going. It ain't no ocean says to go, brain, most of the time. My brain's going. So I get home, and I have the world's most beautiful child standing at our little gate. Daddy! Or he doesn't care that I'm home because he's watching Curious George naked on the couch and doesn't, and I have to pause the show to say, Jude, Daddy, can you press play? Yeah. Yes. Anyway. But I have to calm down my head in order to be present at all with the world's most beautiful child and the world's most beautiful bride, to be honest. And she notices when I'm not, right? Because she hasn't, it's not easy, it's harder to stay home with Jude than it is to go to my office. But her brain's not revved the same way mine is. She just doesn't have the ADD brain like I do, right? So I have to take a breath and calm down in order to hear what she did that day. In other words, I'll ask her what she did, because I care. But am I really hearing it? Or is the adrenaline still coursing and 17 complications and open ends and emails not answered and money that is there or not there or, song idea or whatever it is? So I have to, and I don't always do it to succeed, but I try to, when I think of it, calm down and really listen to the answer. Because when I'm not really listening to the answer, I'm missing not just what happened to my wife and baby, my family, that day, but I am missing, in a very real way, a day that I will look back on and I will know that I missed it. The cliche of someone on his or her deathbed saying, "Wow, time flew. Where did the years go?" Right? That cliche, I think, is born from natural and human nature. We can't stay. As vulnerable. I remember how sensitive Jude's skin was. When he was born. And how he could, everything was just so alive. That would be maddening, to be that open every minute of the day as a grown-up. It's just too much. But I think the time flew. Where did the time go? A part of that is that the skin gets a little thicker and the feelings get a little numbed and our capacity or willingness or decision to be fully present in that, in all those individual moments, lessens over time. And we're left looking back, and the whole thing was a little bit of a haze. A little, anywhere from 1 to 48% autopilot was happening at any time. And so yesterday I asked the first service this too, and I'm curious if anything comes to your mind. I'm just inviting you to think about it. Was there a moment yesterday when you were on 0% autopilot? When there was absolutely no glancing forward or thinking backward?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. For me, I have to decide. And then if I'm really listening to my wife, who's the smartest person I know, she's saying something interesting. I either missed it or I was paying attention. You know what I'm saying? But when I fast forward 20 years, I'm going to look back and I'm going to say, we were so young. But we feel old and cranky and tired a lot of the time because we have a 5-year-old who has the athletic stamina of like Venus Williams. It's ridiculous. He doesn't get tired until his head hits the pillow and then he's asleep in 5 seconds. But until then, he does. I know. I'm sorry to say, I know where this comes from. He never stops talking. he never stops moving, and never. I wish I never stopped moving, but he never stops talking and never stops moving. And then we rub his back, and what just happened? How did you just do that? Anyway. So for me, I have to decide. Like I said, to really pay attention. And to own the moment that I'm in rather than skate by, Have you ever, God bless you, have you ever gotten a job and looked at it as a stepping stone? Right. Do you ever date somebody and know that it wasn't a lifetime dating? It wasn't a lifetime partner, but it was a thing and there was a next thing, right? Or you start a business and you have the best year of your life in your business, but all you're thinking about is your five-year plan. And you think, that, yeah, that worked. Next year is gonna, right? It's like you're hugging today and you're looking over its shoulder at, you know, the road ahead instead of feeling the hug. Or I'm entirely guilty. Like I said, I'm guilty of everything that I'm saying. But among those things is, you know, was there a person in your life that just felt permanently there and then wasn't there, right? And you look back and you say, how did I let that time be squandered? Or how did we never take that trip? How did I never make that phone call? How did I never say I'm sorry? Never healed that. I never said out loud that I forgave them, right? Time goes, and then you look back, and I realized that I wasn't fully there all that time, that I was kind of there, and I was thinking forward and backward instead of present. My wife and I just watched this, she watched this unbelievably scary and disturbing movie, and the only reason, she'd kill me if she knew I was saying this, but the only reason she watched this movie is because she has this huge crush on this guy named Tom Hiddleston, who's a movie star. I guess he's handsome. I definitely resent how flat his stomach is, and definitely resent how much he gets paid to make movies. But every time I catch her watching a TV show or a movie, it's always mysteriously starring Tom Hiddleston. So she's watching this, essentially a horror movie, which I am not into at all. I find, you know, life scary enough. And Tom Hiddleston is married to this woman, but he is haunted, literally and figuratively. And the woman is an innocent. She doesn't know that he's haunted, and she is not haunted. And she is sitting, looking at him, and she can feel that he's haunted. And she says, "You are." I actually wrote it down just because it was such an interesting sentence, right? She says, "Your head is always in the past, but I'm not in the past. I'm right here." And I thought, wow, how often is that true? Like, for me, when I'm sitting with somebody, that my head is not right here. I remember Ann Landers letter. Anybody know? You guys remember Ann Landers? There isn't still an Ann Landers column, is there? It's gone. Is it gone? Yeah. The letter said, "I am 59. I'm 52 years old." And I have always wanted to be a doctor. And the career that I had turned into being a mother. And I am now 52, and I have time, and I have money, and I've always wanted to be a doctor. And the problem, of course, is that becoming a doctor is going to take at least 7 years. And do you think I should go to medical school? Now, of course, there's just absolutely no excuse for asking a complete stranger that question, which was always the case with asking an advice columnist, but okay, you know, every so often they say something interesting. And her answer, I'll never forget, in this particular case, at least it worked for me. This was like 1983 in the Chicago Tribune, I read it, and I still remember it to this day. Her answer was one sentence: "In 7 years, you are going to be 59, whether you're a doctor or not." Great answer. And I, in the spirit of the hypocrisy that I am confessing to all morning, a part of my life story right now, and again, I'll say it, and maybe it resonates for somebody, or maybe it'll allow somebody in the room to admit it to themselves, because I'm not ashamed of it. It's just a fact that I am filled with regret right now. These days, the last year or two, because I came to LA to make a living making music from Chicago in 1998, and the ostensible reason I was coming was that I could go to most big cities in America, have a great music scene, I could make music anywhere, but I wanted to swim with the big fish. The pop music industry is in LA, more or less, LA and New York, and I wanted to swim with the big fish. And I came to LA, and I didn't. I mean, it's not a boast, because I'm talking about regret. You're looking at one of the most successful independent singer-songwriters in the United States. There are almost none that have sold 100,000 records, and probably none will again. Like, I might be the last, right? But that's not how I am viewing it. I view it with regret, because the music industry, I was in West Hollywood. I was down the street from people who are at the top of the charts right now and were at the top of the charts then. I never once knocked on their door, made a phone call, risked the abject humiliation of rejection, which is an inevitable part of the process. And instead, what happened to me is I magically, unplannedly, beautifully, fell in to a circuit, to a career, singing positive songs for nice people. All over, no. Okay, it was a compliment to you. Go ahead and applaud, sure. sure. But that was not, and I'm proud, I mean, I'm not paying lip service, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of my songs, I'm proud of selling the records, I'm proud of making a living, I'm proud of never being late on a mortgage payment, you know, since meeting my wife and having a mortgage, because before then, no bank would have given me a mortgage. So I'm proud of it, but I wimped out. All that time, I didn't do that thing. However, if you told me in 1998, when I moved to LA, when I drove my little Toyota Tercel across the country, if you had told me that 20 years from now, you would be on a different stage every weekend, and like next weekend, four different stages in Kansas City, all across the city, or in Louisville the following couple of weeks later, and then in Indianapolis a couple of weeks after that. And if you had said, Danny, you're driving across the country, and 20 years from now, you will have as many bookings in front of nice people who buy your albums, no pressure, who buy your albums and pay you, these people will come out to hear you sing your songs all over the United States. That's where you're going to be in 20 years. I would have said, that is the most awesome prophecy ever, right? I'll take it. That's why I'm going. Clearly, if you told me this in 98, I would say, clearly, I'm about to do a lot of things right, right? But meanwhile, I've arrived 19 years, 20 years later, and I am doing the what now thing at myself. The what next, the what if, the what didn't I do thing. And that annoys me, but it's just a fact. I can't pretend I'm not feeling it. So there's another one of those dichotomies. I can be proud and regretful at the same time. And like I said, I'm telling this, and some things I plan to say, some things I don't plan to say. That I didn't plan on talking about. So if it's particularly interesting to somebody in the room and you're thinking about it, go. Maybe I'm just saying it so that you feel comfortable saying, yeah, I feel the same pride and regret at the same time. And it really is okay. I once had an interviewer say on the radio was interviewing me and said, "You talk about being a child of two lawyers and being this, you know, economics major and computer programmer and all this cerebral stuff, and then you write songs like One Power that are all about this hope and faith and, you know, and humanity and love and centeredness. And how do you reconcile those two halves of you?" And I just blurted out, "Oh, I definitely do not reconcile them. They are irreconcilable. One half of me thinks the other half is full of it at all times." Right? And I'm making a living. The guy who writes Where the Ocean Says to Go is not in the room when I'm paying the bills. Right? When I'm writing a song, when I'm singing even Where the Ocean Says to Go, I am not paying the bills. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I could go on, and clearly I do. All right, so. So the question I'll pose to you then is, if you were told 10 years ago that you would be here 10 years later, how would you feel about it? Would you say yeah? Or would you say, oh no? I mean, you know, I mean, there's a lot of divorces in the world. It's not a digression. I'm just as an example. There's a lot of divorces in the world. And there's a lot of firings in the world. People get fired from their jobs and marriages end. I'm not going to whitewash it and say that those aren't painful. And I'm not going to say that there's any universal thing to say about them. But I will say that most of the people I know who got divorced or got fired ended up happier than they had been before they'd been divorced or fired. Most, not making a blanket statement. So even if these 10 years have taken you somewhere circuitous or hard, I'm curious for you. You know, I'm just asking the question. Drop it in your head. What would I say if I knew that this is where I was going to be 10 years ago? And as a follow-up, and I'm asking myself this question too, can I admit it, that feeling? Can I appreciate it? Can I say, yeah, okay, I'm still looking down the road, I'm hugging and doing this, I'm still saying what now, right? But I'm also saying now, this is good, this is good. If you said, it's in 20 years, your music's going to be on TV every day. I would say, that's awesome. And instead, I get the statements that my music's on TV every day, and I think, yeah, but it wasn't this show or that show. Right? It was $100, but it wasn't $1,000. It was $1,000, but it wasn't $10,000. You know what I mean? There were 200 people in the audience, but not 500 or 1,000. Right? Always in my head. And that, again, that is that human thing, as far as I can tell. I'm giving myself a pass on it. And I wholeheartedly encourage you to give yourself a pass on it. That is the human thing that says, well, I built a 20-story building. I'm going to build a 30-story building next. Right? Well, this year was $1.5 million in revenue. I'm going for 2 next year. Natural. I have never met, I'm not talking about Carolyn at all personally, but I've never met a minister who, when they talked about their church, they didn't want to grow it. Everybody wants more people. Right? More. Just more. So I'm giving myself a pass on the more thing. But the question is, am I robbing myself of my life while I'm living it? Am I actually stealing appreciation and the words my wife is saying to me and actually hearing, because I have had it just a few times, accidentally hearing my music on TV, am I robbing myself of this spectacular achievement in my own mind? I'm not saying for you. It is a dream come true. How did I forget that I wrote the dream myself? That was what I wanted, and there it is. And instead, I'm always thinking, yeah, but over there. But look what that guy did. You know, always. And it's a relentless pressure. So are you today denying yourself, and I'm really asking, maybe the answer is no, good for you. Are you denying yourself appreciation for where you've landed, even if you're also asking what now? And there's more questions on the same vein. Are you denying yourself the beautiful love being offered by the people in your life, even because you are looking for a better love or a different love? You know, I'm often a muddle in my mind, but one of the most coherent thoughts I ever shared with a friend of mine was she was a minister with 1,000 people in the congregation who absolutely adored her, and she had an assistant minister who couldn't stand her. And we talked many times about this assistant minister and how she was trying to break the ice and have meetings and conversations. I think they went bowling, for God's sake. I mean, she just tried. And I said, okay, and I just blurted out one day, okay, I've just realized something. You are seeking love from the only place it's not going to come. When if you cast your eye anywhere else, it's already there. And she stopped trying. So Are you or am I? I'm absolutely guilty of this. So I'm again not a master of it. I'm just asking. Is there a place where real friendship is being offered, but you are asking what next? Who next? Who else? Who isn't? Who was? Who might be? Right? Is there a dollar in your bank account? And instead of feeling like, hell yeah, I made that money, you're feeling like, where's the rest? Why isn't there more? Right? I'm not interviewed all the time. This happens to be like two of the only times ever. Another woman was interviewing me about gratitude, and she asked me, Daniel, do you have what is your practice for remaining grateful? And I don't do pretentious questions like that because I don't have practices. I sit next to my wife and watch movies. I love my boy. I write songs. I'm just, call me a schmo. I'm just me. I like Adam Sandler movies. You know what I'm saying? So I get it. And I mean, I go to a different place with my songs. I'm not being overly humble. I'm just saying it's just me. I don't have a practice to remain grateful. I am very grateful a lot of the time. But so when she asked me that question, I said, well, I don't have a practice. I said, but if you were going to ask me, do I feel grateful right now? And if so, why? I would tell you I feel grateful because no matter what I could possibly complain about, somebody has it worse. And she's like, well, can you put it a little softer for my book? I said, no, I can't, because it is literally true. And it's true about ourselves as well. But what I said to her was, I said, I am out of shape, so it aches. I feel very too young to ache getting out of bed, but my body hurts a little bit. It's because I'm heavy and out of shape. All right. I said, well, somebody would do anything to get out of bed. I said, okay. Anything. If I have $100 in the bank, somebody would do anything to have a bank account. Anything. If I'm complaining about my hair kind of leaving my head gradually, my dad lost his hair when he was like 20. He was bald in his wedding photos in 23, right? If I complain, and I don't complain about being relatively short, 5'7", I'm not tiny, but I'm not tall. Well, somebody would do anything. A friend of mine, her little boy, is now 14, and he's about 4'6". He just never sprouted, right? If I complain about being heavy, this is thin to somebody, right? They would do anything to weigh this. They'll have surgery. They would do anything, right? You follow what I'm saying? Anything I could conceivably complain about. If I have a car that only kind of runs, somebody would do anything to have a car that kind of runs. Anything. Anything I can complain about. So, I think we absolutely do that to ourselves on a daily basis. Couldn't you have it worse? Couldn't I have it worse on anything I could possibly think of? So, if I'm pulling this why, what next thing, this what now thing, and instead, I could, and I'm not advocating that I do it or anybody could do it all the time, I could be saying, oh, I have $100 in the bank. Thank God. What would I do if there weren't that $100? Right? I have this car that keeps breaking down. Thank God. Right? So in 20 years, what will you look back on your life now and say, where did that go? I was skating through that. Right? My parents were alive then. I didn't know how good that was, and now they're gone. Or that friendship, I saw them all the time, and now they're gone. Or my legs didn't hurt then. Why didn't I hike or walk or do anything? I didn't know. My legs didn't hurt, and I didn't think about it, and now they do. That was before my knee went out. That was before my memory went. That was before my vision went. Right? Any number of things. So, that's the question. Where and how is what's next or what now, how is that, if it is, robbing you of enjoyment and appreciation in being present and hearing the thing the person you love is saying to them, or appreciating where your business has come, or your career has come, or your body has come, or where your hair hasn't gone. Like I said, no conclusion to offer, just thoughts.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.